You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
The draft is upon us. The first-year player draft will begin on Thursday with the first round and continue through Saturday. I am Allison Sutter from MLB.com, and all the teams right now are gearing up to make those selections, so let's talk to our beat writers about their thoughts on that. Ken, the Dodgers have four of the first 65 picks, which is nice. They have compensation for losing Greinke, supplemental pick for not signing their number 36 overall last year. So it could be good for the Dodgers. Do they have philosophies as far as, what they lean toward? Are there been any trends, or is it just basically like what they, best available player, they just go from there?
Well, it's really hard to tell. They've got a whole new management team. They've only made one draft. So one draft does not make a trend. They didn't do very well in that draft with their first-round picks. One blew out his elbow, had Tommy John surgery before he ever pitched, and the other one didn't sign. So I guess that's a trend, but not a good one. So I guess the main goal here is to do better than last year. They had extra picks last year, too. The tradition for the Dodgers has been pitching. But, again, a lot of that was under Logan White, who was in charge of the draft for 12 years. They still went with pitching last year, took pitchers with the first two picks. Maybe they'll go that way. But I happen to think if they decide to go for need, which in my opinion they should, it would be more position players and hitters. That's where they seem to be light throughout their system and really throughout the last 15 years or so. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see. And it's not even clear who really calls the shots. They've got about five former general managers in the front office and a scouting director. And they're pretty close to the vest as far as revealing who does what. So we basically sit back and watch and see how it turns out.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because it does make me chuckle. They do have five former GMs. I would love to be on a fly on the wall just to see what some of those conversations are like. I did want to ask you one thing. Just in general, with all the money that the Dodgers spend, and we know everything that they've done, and some things just seem, outlandish, but you've mentioned, and we've talked about on this podcast a lot, that they do want to get back to having a lot of their players develop through their own system and getting younger and just finding their own talent and having that on the field and not just doing what they've done in the past few years, which is a lot of clearing out some of the old stuff, bringing in some of the new, and having to bring other things along with that that they might not actually want. But they really do want to rely more on their farm system moving forward, right?
Well, yeah, but I think, any club would say that. I think that they've tried to kind of jumpstart that by being very, very aggressive in Cuba, signing a lot of Cuban players. But so far, the payoff has been minimal, and they've had three very very well-paid busts in Guerrero, in Arboleda, and Oliveira. $115 million they spent to sign those three, and none of them are in the picture anymore. When you're looking for – those were all signed as infielders that could hit. Arboleda maybe not so much, but Guerrero for sure and Oliveira for sure, hitters who play the infield. And so if you're really looking for a need, I guess if they were counting on those three and they paid them as if they were, then those three need to be replaced. So, an offensive-minded middle infielder or a third baseman would fit the bill as far as helping to replace those three that have turned into busts.
Chris, kind of not a whole lot of excitement because they don't have a first-round pick due to their signing of Jeff Samardzija, which is turning out to be a nice signing. So no first-rounder, so I guess by the time it gets to them in the second round, they need to just take what the best thing that's available, right?
They're going to put a bunch of names up on a big, dartboard, and then they're just going to throw a dart, and see where it lands. No, they will approach this draft just about the same way as they do every other draft, Allison. What they won't do or what they haven't been doing is maybe following with their scouts, the guys who they would narrow down to 20 or 30 they might take, because they just can't do that anymore. you know, picking 59 with the number 59 pick being their first selection. History shows that they have gotten many, many productive players. I mean, excellent players in the second, third, and fourth rounds. So they're not going to waste their time. They will put a lot of thought into this. I mean, if they can get another Brandon Crawford, another who was, I think, a third or fourth round pick, another Matt Duffy, who was an 18th round pick, another Brandon Belt, who I think was maybe, you know, early second round or something like that, you know, hey, that's all right. So, you know, Sergio Romo is, I can think, their biggest success story, 26th, 28th round, something like that. So, you know, they're still putting a lot of effort in, but you're right. I mean, even if they admit it, the spotlight will not be as bright on them as it has been in the past.
Yeah, and that's okay. You know, we've talked a lot about just the health of this entire organization from the major leagues all the way down to the lowest level, the minor leagues. I do not ever doubt anything about the Giants because of what a well-oiled machine they have been over time. Their organization as a whole, I mean, seems pretty strong, right? I'm not sure, you know, how much, like, top-level, like, talent is ready to come up, but they seem to be pretty healthy throughout the system.
They really are, Allison. It's mostly the lower rungs of the system, but, you know, they've got a couple of good hitters. Christian Arroyo at Double-A being the most impressive among them. I mean, he kind of reminds me of, you know, before all the bad stuff started happening to him, Pete Rose. You know, just
right.
That kind of attitude, you know, hey, I'm going to hit, you know, I expect to hit, and I'm, you know, I will hit. Kind of one of those kinds of kids. And they have some decent pitching talents. I think most notable one right now is Tyler Beede, although last year's first pick, Phil Bickford, is making some noise. In fact, they had a day during this road trip, we just having a read the minor league report, I think every single starting pitcher in the organization had, like, a quality start. And not just a quality start. It was like 7 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, 10 Ks, you know, that sort of thing. You know, every single starting pitcher on that day, and you're thinking, wow, not that they're all going to turn into, you know, Tim Lincecums, but, you know, you see the talent there. So it's there. It's just, you know, still simmering, so to speak.
Right. Yeah, I think they know what they're doing when it comes to that, which is stating the obvious. So a couple of interesting notes on the major league level. First of all, I love that Madison Bumgarner wants to be in the Home Run Derby. I would say there's a 0% chance that his manager would ever allow for him to do that. But it makes for, you know, fun fodder. Obviously, Bruce Bochy has no choice. He cannot let him possibly hurt himself in something as completely unnecessary as a Home Run Derby, right?
Right. 1,000 times right. I mean, the Giants are, I don't know if they're, you know, liberal like the city they represent. Maybe a little bit, but no, they just cannot risk injury to their number one pitcher. As good as Samardzija's been, as good as Johnny Cueto has been, Madison Bumgarner is still the man, still the ace on the staff. And even if it were Cueto or Samardzija, you don't want to risk injury to any of your starting pitchers. You don't want to risk any injury to any of your pitchers, period, doing something as frivolous as that. So, you know, once upon a time, way back when, they had the skills competition in the All-Star game, and Dave Parker messed up his arm throwing. I mean, here's a guy who could practically throw on a fly from the warning track to the plate, and he messed up his arm, and, you know, he wasn't the same. So,
wow.
I mean, people need to remember. I think people do remember that, and that's why the skills competition, I think, partly was, fell by the wayside. And, plenty of cautionary tales there for, the Giants and Madison Bumgarner in this.
AJ, wow, Padres have 6 of the first 85 picks, so we could say that they are going to be very present in that. And they had a very good outcome the last time they were in a situation largely like this, so I guess there's safety in numbers, right? They've got to hit on some of these.
Yeah, and, I mean, that's really what it comes down to, and it also allows allows the Padres to take some more risks, maybe, because if they reach on a guy, then you know what, they can say, hey, we'll be a little more conservative with our next pick. But three picks in the top 25, five on the first day, six in the first 85. A year ago, they only had one of the first 85 picks, and it was, I think, number 51 overall. So it's safe to say their draft preparation. Now, they're not going to say that they've worked any harder this year than last year because they work hard for every draft, but it seems like they spent a lot more time evaluating some higher quality of player than they did last year, and it's certainly a chance for them to restock their organization.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot about just what they have to do, what their organization looks like, and I realize that they did get some back in the Kimbrel trade, and there has been it's not completely depleted, but it has taken a beating. It's taken a big hit. And so this is going to be a big one for them. They need, I guess, pitching. Who doesn't, right? Who doesn't need pitching?
Yep.
That's going to get real redundant. What's their philosophy about who, what they want, what they need, and who they may take?
Well, I asked scouting director Mark Connor whether they would try and maybe diversify the first six picks, maybe kind of go balance out the high school and college, balance out the pitching and the hitting. He said no. He said we're just going to take the best player, the best fit available. So it sounds like they're it's not, it doesn't really have much to do with anything philosophically, like, hey, we want to fill this position, we want to fill that position. Now, the Padres have always been kind of high on middle-of-the-field players, the catcher, shortstop, center fielder types, because they feel like they can move those guys around. But it sounds like they're really just going to go for whoever the best player is available at the time without much philosophy for, hey, we need to fill this need or that need down the road.
There's some teams that if they need help immediately, they tend to go heavy more on the college player. Other teams really like those, like high school arms. Where do the Padres fall on that? Or do they have a trend in that?
Well, I think the high school arms might be a little more they're a little more risky because they're younger. And the Padres, this draft, kind of sounds like they're willing to take risks. One player that's been mentioned, he's a college arm, was Cal Quantrill. He's coming off Tommy John surgery. He was projected by some to be a top five pick. He went from Stanford. So I think they're willing to some teams want help in the next year, in the next 2 years. I think we saw last week's James Shields trade, the Padres going for a 17-year-old prospect, that they want to build the organization with young talent kind of no matter the age. If it helps them 4 years, good. If it helps them in 3 years, good. If it helps them next year, also good. But I think certain teams might be more apt to take those picks that are going to help them in the near future, whereas the Padres might be looking more long-term with higher upside and bigger potential.
Okay. We don't want to confuse people and get like too technical, or maybe not confuse is not the right word, but maybe bore people. We don't want to do that. But the money that they have to spend is significantly more than they had last year, and that is largely dependent on how many picks you have. But in the top 10 rounds, they have $12.8 million to spend. Last year they had $4 million, if I have this right. So that's got to be kind of nice for them to have a little bit more flexibility there. If there's slots and there's, there's kind of projected slots for first round, second round, third round. And what this all spells out to is that the Padres just haven't been a very good major league team. So they tend to, reap the benefits in the draft. But having that much more to spend, that has to be a little bit less confining.
Yeah, and to put it into some context, their first round pick this year for that slot, they get almost $4 million to spend there. They had $4 million for the entire for their entire allotment last year. So just one guy this year is essentially worth what their whole allotment was last year. What that does allow is it allows them to certain teams, if they're only signing one guy, they have to really focus on signability. The Padres can, if they want to pick a guy that might ask for more money than he's allotted, they can move around some of those dollar figures. And I know, like you said, we don't want to bore people with the specifics of it, but that's important in the sense that they're a team that wants to go with upside.
Steve, as we know, the Diamondbacks do not have their first rounder because they signed Zach Greinke. So that is the price you pay for getting the best free agent in the history of the world. So their first pick will be the 39th overall, which is not terrible. They also have a second rounder, 52nd overall. They're not going to have the cream of the crop here, but tell me a little bit about what they might be looking for as they try to stock their system.
Well, it's so hard to know who's going to be available at 39. It's such a difference from where they were last year when they were picking first overall. They knew they were going to have whoever they wanted, and this year they're at the mercy of all 30 teams, all of 29 teams, plus plus some others before it gets to them at 39. So they'd certainly like to add maybe some more up the middle depth in their system. Catching has been something that they've needed to add. But again, when it comes to picking 39th, they're going to try to take the best available player at that point, and that's kind of the way they're setting up their board right now.
So do they feel – how do you – tell me about the Diamondback system. How do you feel about it? They've taken a hit for some of the trades that they've made, some of the deals that they've done. What do you see, like, in the upper levels? I mean, is it a healthy system?
Well, I think it's certainly not as deep as it once was, but I think it's probably not as it's also not as bad as people make it out to be now. They do have some guys. Archie Bradley's pitching again today as we speak and pitching well. He's a guy that's come up and helped them. They still have Braden Shipley, their first-round pick from a few years back. He's getting ready to be here shortly. They've got Zach Godley. They've got some other pitching prospects, Taylor Clark, that they picked last year. So they still do have prospects. It's just a matter of some of the high-profile ones that they've dealt the last couple of years have gotten a lot of attention.
Okay. And I've been looking a little bit at some of the coverage recently. I like Tony La Russa's comments. I found them to be very straightforward and somewhat humble, just about how, like, they're just as frustrated as everybody else, that they are not happy with what's been going on at the major league level, that they're not necessarily impatient, but they're not pleased. So I guess that's kind of the overall feeling, like they're sort of waiting for this thing to get turned around, but it seems to be going the wrong direction.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, and it's been hard for Tony because he's looking and he's with the team almost every day. So I think he said there have been 3, maybe 4 days since the start of spring training that he hasn't been around the team. So he feels like, you know, he likes what he's seeing from the coaching staff, what the coaching staff is telling the players. He likes the effort level out of the players. They're just not getting the results. And I think that's what's frustrating, because it's hard for them to kind of put their finger on just what exactly is wrong. Definitely there's frustration, and you know, when fans talk about urgency and, you know, the Diamondbacks are, you know, not taking proper urgency with all of this, or they need to make changes. I mean, you and I both know that there's nobody that's less patient than Tony La Russa when it comes to losing. So it's not a matter of being complacent. It's just a matter of not exactly knowing what the actual fix is, or being able to correct it right now at this point in the season.
So things are okay for the Rockies in that respect, I guess, Thomas. But what are their indications as far as what they may want? Is there a need? What is their philosophy? Best available or some specific position? Where are they going this year?
Okay, well, first of all, and I agree with this from a baseball perspective, you can't draft for position. I mean, yes, you can draft pitchers if they are impact guys, and that sometimes outweighs the position player. But really, you've got to take the guy that you think at that position will be best for you. And that's what the Rockies have done over the years. I mean, a classic example that I brought up in my draft preview the other day, you look at Trevor Story, their star young shortstop right now. Well, when they drafted him, they had Troy Tulowitzki at short, and it looked like Troy Tulowitzki would be at short for a long, long time. So the question is, gee, why draft a guy like that, even if he's out of high school? Well, you never do know what will happen in the future. Troy Tulowitzki is now with the Toronto Blue Jays, and Trevor Story has found his place as the Rockies shortstop. And the other thing, too, is you draft a lot of shortstops and a lot of center fielders in the draft because most teams are looking for athletic ability, the ability to hit, run, field, hit for average, hit for power. And on your high school and even college programs, that's where those guys tend to congregate, especially your best athletes. Well, a lot of those guys end up changing positions before they got to the major leagues. I mean, I'm looking even at the Rockies bullpen. There's Jason Mott there. Well, Jason Mott was drafted as a catcher, but he ended up moving to pitcher. So you really can't zero in on a position. What you've got to do is you've got to draft ability. What I like about the Rockies also is they drafted a number of outfielders and signed a number of outfielders recently that can really run, and I think that's going to make a difference also at Coors Field, because you're asked to score a lot of times from – if you can score from first on a double, then you're an asset to the team. So those are the things we're looking for, and of course they look for power arms, but I don't know that that's obvious. They may have to draft a guy that – in a lower round that, they could teach to be a power pitcher.
Yeah, I think the other thing to point out is guys can move positions. I mean, there's a lot of guys that came up that were drafted as a certain position that never came near that position by the time they got to the big leagues. And I think people put too much stock into, like, oh, well, you can't, they have this at shortstop, so you can't draft another shortstop. And you can make that shortstop into somebody else, possibly. I mean, in Houston, the most famous example of that is when they drafted Lance Berkman. He's a first baseman for Rice, and Jeff Bagwell was in the midst of, 15-year Astros career. Well, certainly they weren't going to pass on Lance Berkman, and they found a place for him somewhere else. He became an outfielder, and then Bagwell's shoulder got all messed up, and then he moved to first base. But the point is, like, these are young 18- to 22-year-old players. They can adjust, right?
Yeah, they can adjust if you draft guys with athletic ability. A lot of times when you draft that first baseman and make him an outfielder, because he hasn't been used to running around, things like that, you create an injury risk. But obviously what the Astros did was they really looked into him. They looked at how he ran. They looked at how he moved and said, okay, this guy can play any number of positions. And boom, they were able to get a guy who was a big part of a winning future for them. I look back at Brad Hopp, who was a first baseman at LSU. He came to the Rockies, became an outfielder, and was a part of that 2017 that went to the World Series. Obviously, with Todd Helton at first base, people had to move. And they had a number of first basemen that attempted to move and couldn't do it. But Brad Hopp was one who could.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so moving on to the Major League side, Tyler Chatwood. Two Tommy John surgeries, and I'm focused more, of course, on his ERA on the road, but he's having a fine season. And it's Tommy John that makes my thing really, really not guaranteed, and often does not end well. So that has to be just a big boost for the team and everybody watching him, that he seems to be able to still put together a pretty nice career after having those surgeries.
Yes, he has, and he's one of those guys, you've heard this before, the short right-hander. He's, I think, listed at 6'1". I don't think he actually is. And they always say those guys are injury risk because they overthrow, blah, blah, blah. He had Tommy John surgery at age 16. So really it was before he was fully grown. And for him to become a major league pitcher after that, that shows that body has a lot in it. It's a very strong body for him. And so when he came back from this one, he last pitched before this year, he last pitched in April of 2014. So it was really a year and a half that he took off. He wanted to pitch before then, but the Rockies held him up and let him get back his strength and let him also settle into a pattern of pitching, because he's the type of guy that wants to go really hard, so they had to back him off a little. Now this is what you're seeing. You're seeing a guy that the Angels drafted in the second round a few years ago, and a guy, when we talk about athleticism in the draft, there were a lot of people that thought he would be a starting center fielder in the major league. When you are that good of an athlete, no matter what position they put you at, you've got a chance to succeed, and he has done so as a pitcher.